Today is November 10th, at least when we're recording it, 2021. This is episode number 55. Am I saying that I am not always? Yeah, anyway, sometimes these shows go up a couple days later. Episode number 560, the Apple Context Machine. That's a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief of the Mac Observer. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, you can shoot me a note over at macobserver.com/contextmachine, and that will redirect you straight to our Facebook group. Now, joining me today, I have, once again, my very good friend, Jeff Gamet. Jeff.
Brian, as always, I am really excited to get to hang out with you.
Same, man. Same. I like catching up with you, and I like hanging out with you, and I like doing this show with you, man.
It's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. You know what else is fun? Yeah. You know what else is fun, Jeff?
Cake.
LinkedIn Jobs.
That's what I meant.
Super fun. They're sponsoring this week's episode, and I appreciate that. I'm going to tell you more about LinkedIn Jobs later in the episode. But before we get that, though, before we get to that even, we have Apple and Tim Cook talking about one of my favorite things. You know what's interesting? Yeah, not cake. Still not cake. Oh. What's up with the cake?
I don't know. I'm kind of hungry for cake.
I am off sweets currently, and I've been jonesing for some cake, so I get it. Also, you're not helping. I'm just saying.
I'm sorry. No, I'm not. But I want to point out, I find it kind of funny that through our whole discussion before we started recording, mm-hmm. even though I've been jonesing for cake, it never came up until right now.
Well, that's how we roll sometimes, right?
It is. It's how I keep the mystery in our relationship.
Exactly. Yep, right. Okay, so here's the deal. Tim Cook, now, long-time listeners of the show are probably going to be surprised on my take on this. But we're going to get into that because I do find this interesting. Tim Cook said that he personally owns either Bitcoin or Ethereum. He was apparently asked if he owned Bitcoin or Ethereum, and his answer was, I do. So technically speaking, it could be one or the other. It's probably both, but, you know, he said, I do. And he called it a reasonable, the cryptocurrency was a reasonable thing to own as part of a diversified portfolio, whatever. That's a very Tim Cook kind of answer. But he also said that Apple was not going to be doing the crypto. And he said that I wouldn't go invest in crypto, not because I wouldn't invest my own money, but because I don't think people buy Apple stock to get exposure to crypto, which is spot on.
What a hypocrite. I cannot believe that he's saying this. I am totally kidding.
He also said, and again, this is a quote, that he said Apple itself was looking, he was asked whether or not Apple was looking into any kind of crypto technology for its own use. And he said, quote, it's not something we have immediate plans to do. But he added, there are other things that we are definitely looking at. What the heck does that mean? Back in 2019, an Apple Pay executive commented that the company saw long-term potential in this area. Now, here's the thing. Readers, listeners, even both, probably know that I'm very interested in cryptocurrency. And if you've listened to shows in the past, you probably know that I do own some cryptocurrency, and I have for a very long time. I'm a cryptocurrency enthusiast. We talk about it on this show. We talk about it sometimes on TDO. I've written about it for a long time. And Tim Cook is not wrong. He is not wrong to not have to have Apple not doing a crypto thing.
Here's my take. Tim can do with his own money as he pleases, but I'll add a caveat that if he were to do things that are illegal or against the law with his money, I would see a serious problem with that, not simply because, hey, now he's breaking the law, but because that reflects on Apple and could cause problems for the company because of what he's doing. Okay, so he can invest in cryptocurrencies however he wants. I don't see a problem there. If Apple was investing money in cryptocurrencies, and I'm not even a shareholder of Apple, I would have a problem with that. Because to me, that would seem like a company gambling with its revenue.
I hear you. I don't agree with you on that, because it depends on what you're doing with it. So, and really, that's kind of what I wanted to talk about. What I wanted to talk about was why, like in particular, for instance, why it makes complete sense for Apple to not take cryptocurrency for purchases. It'd probably be something very easy for Apple to do. Apple could add paying with stuff with cryptocurrency to Apple Pay if it wanted to. It could even be that it would be relatively easy for the company to do with its own Apple Pay structure and infrastructure. And it would probably even be easy for Apple to become like a friction eradicator by taking cryptocurrency and then immediately turning it into dollars for a fee to the retailer. Be super easy for Apple to do that if it so chose.
Okay, so if Apple were to do that, I'd actually be okay with that, because that's just handling a money transaction like they're doing right now. Yeah, essentially,
it becomes a money service, and Apple could find someone that would partner with them and do instant conversions, so that Apple wasn't on the hook for wild swings while it held the cryptocurrency. These are things that Apple could do, but it's those wild swings that are a fantastic reason for Apple and every other retailer not to take crypto. I mean, like if I was a retailer, I would probably take crypto simply from the standpoint that I want to accumulate more. So, but that's a world difference from wanting to take crypto just as part of your overall business strategy. And the problem with crypto right now is the swings in value, and the swings in value, which currently, as of this recording, happen to be swings higher, but you cannot run a business where the value of what you are taking for your goods or services is wildly fluctuating, unless that fluctuation is always up. And guess what? It won't always be up. In fact, it has often not been up.
Okay. So when you put all of it this way, now I'm starting to waffle a little bit about Apple acting as like a transaction broker.
No, but they could do that. They could do that in a way that isolates themselves and the retailers.
Yeah, it's okay. So the initial problem that I have with Apple being involved in crypto would be if they did something weird, like they took company funds and just started buying crypto.
Well, but why?
Because to me, that feels like they're now gambling with their shareholders' money.
Every investment that they make is a gamble. Apple tends to be extraordinarily conservative with its investments, but they're still investments. And by definition, an investment, any kind of investment that's going to offer any a return of any sort is going to be some level of risk.
Yes, but the other types of investments Apple is typically making are investments where Apple has some level of control in the outcome. When they invest in a chip maker, it's because they know they're going to get a return on those chips. Apple has
money that's in bonds. For all we know, Apple might own gold. And would you have a problem with Apple buying gold with its shareholder money?
Oh, man. See, now you're making me burn new neural pathways because I hadn't thought about this before. Am I wrong in assuming that gold tends to be pretty stable and you don't get wild swings in valuation?
Tell that to the Hunt brothers.
That's a
deep dive there, or deep track. And actually, the Hunt brothers were silver. And that was the 70s. Ask your parents, or maybe even your grandparents. Whatever. The point is this. Gold is often considered a hedge against inflation, but it does have risk associated with it, and it certainly can fluctuate up and down a little bit within short periods of time. But so can stocks, and so can a bond is one of the safest investments you can make. It's also usually one of the lowest returns that you can get. But so Apple has that subsidiary, right? Braeburn.
Oh yeah,
right. And Braeburn is a type of Apple, LOL. But it is based in, I think, in Nevada or Utah, one of the two. And what that company does is invest Apple's absurdly large cash hoard. And they invest it in part by investing some of it and putting some of it, in bonds, which again is a kind of investment. But there's risk with all that. So why is crypto different to you?
That's a really good question. Why is crypto different to me? Maybe because it doesn't have the history that the established history that we have, say, with gold or bonds.
Okay. Well, what about stocks?
I don't know. Yeah.
I challenge you on this. I challenge you to burn some additional neuro pathways. And investing is investing. And if there's greater volatility with one investment or another, I mean, everyone's got their own risk tolerance, that's for sure.
Yeah. And here we are, me burning new neural pathways live on the air. And I can't give you a good reason why I would be more okay with Apple investing in gold than in crypto.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. I accept your apology. So, all right. Now, all of that said, Tim is very right. Like, people aren't investing in Apple for exposure to crypto. That's crypto. That's not why people are buying shares of Apple. He makes a very good point about that, and that makes total sense. But that is essentially a separate issue from whether or not Apple itself was looking into, quote-unquote, any other kind of crypto technology. And I should add there that that can really mean a couple of things. By the way, this interview was with the New York Times. We did cover it. Charlotte wrote about it for us. I'll have a link to that in the show notes. And there are a couple of ways any company could get involved in a crypto. One would be to accept it as payment. And again, it is an extraordinarily rational position to not accept crypto for payments. And I do want to dive deeper into that. But then there also Apple could make its own crypto, like Facebook was trying to do, because Facebook basically wanted to get around the banking systems of the world, and Facebook can go F itself. And Meta
I laugh only because I'm afraid for our future.
But there is also other ways where a company could deploy some kind of blockchain-based kind of thing in order to provide a service, probably. Like, for instance, you know, Apple is really keen on people being able to own and control their own medical data, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Apple could deploy that on a blockchain. Could. I'm not saying they will. I'm not even necessarily saying they should, but it's something they could do, right? Mm-hmm. That would be a fantastic way to allow us to be able to access and control our own medical information. And you know, maybe that's one of the ways that Apple says that there's, you know, some long-term potential there. But Apple could also, like I said, be a bridge for retailers wanting to be able to accept crypto, but not wanting the exposure to it, meaning they want to be able to get money from people who want to spend crypto, but they actually want to get it in dollars. Apple could very easily turn probably a tidy little extra, you know, small fortune by providing that kind of service and taking a percentage.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that's something that Apple could do. But here's the thing: when you are buying something with dollars, so you were a widget maker or a baker making cakes. And you're buying your flour for dollars, and then you're selling your cakes for crypto. If the value of that crypto goes down, it's going to make it very hard for you to buy more flour.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, ignoring all of the various things about converting it to all the various hassles that might come, like, you know, can you actually buy your flour for crypto, you know, that sort of thing. Ignoring that, it becomes a huge problem for any retailer of every size if what you're taking for payment is worth less when it comes to then buying more supplies. And that's the problem.
The only company I've seen that's been able to successfully manage to in essence sell things for less than it's costing is Amazon.
Right.
But they also are generating revenue in a lot of other ways. You know, for example, AWS.
Right. It's where all the money's come from. And then mm-hmm. they've also taken all the data from that their vendors have generated and then gone into competition against those vendors.
Very true.
So, you know, okay. There's that.
So I have a question about the optics of Apple handling crypto as a payment bridge for their users.
Okay, which they don't do and which are they not don't going do. To do.
Right. So if they were to do that, mm-hmm. I'm always seeing articles about how bad cryptocurrencies are for the environment because of the amount of energy that's used to just do all of it. And would that look bad for Apple as a company that's trying to present itself as an environmentally responsible corporation? Would this look bad for Apple to then start managing crypto payments?
Yeah, it would, but only if it's one of the cryptos that is awful for the environment, like Bitcoin. So Bitcoin uses the proof of work method of validating and securing the network, meaning that it is based on. And listen, I've recently come up with probably a 5-minute spiel on understanding the difference between proof of work and proof of stake. And I don't know that we have time to go into that today, but the reality is that Bitcoin uses proof of work. That means that there are all kinds of computers being thrown at the task with people trying to mine new Bitcoins as a reward. And that electricity is massive. And what's worse is that the vast majority of that electricity at any given moment is doing work that won't even count. Because it's only the work that was done that found the block that actually counts and goes against the blockchain. So that's a mess. And yes, that would be a problem, I think, a messaging problem for Apple. By the way, Ichabod does have a ball and is directly under my desk on the bouncing the ball.
So at some point, if Ichabod bounces the ball loud enough, we'll be able to get his editorial input on the show.
Yes, exactly. So, but there are plenty of proof of stake cryptocurrencies out there. And as a matter of fact, for me, the new cryptos that I'm interested in solve a problem, offer proof of stake validation and rewards, and actually are doing something. And that to me is super important. And Apple could work with a cryptocurrency that is proof of stake versus proof of work, so that it didn't have that environmental footprint. In fact, it could say that we are supporting this particular cryptocurrency because it is does not have a an environmental impact, or has much less of an environmental impact, or negligible environmental impact compared to some other cryptos.
So at that point, whatever crypto it is that Apple were to hypothetically support would become Apple Coin.
No, not necessarily.
Because that would be the crypto that most Apple product users would probably gravitate towards, simply because it's the one that's easily accessible to them. Most Mac users use Safari.
But why would they do that in the first place, though? Which is why Apple won't be doing this.
Yeah.
Making all of this an academic talk. But here's the thing. So, for instance, the world of NFTs. People might... Do you know anything about NFTs? Yes. We didn't talk about this pre-show. We did. But you do.
Like we've ever let planning get in the way of a discussion.
That is a fair point. So, NFTs, a lot of people might be thinking of, like, $20,000 avatars with an ape on them. And yes, that exists.
That totally exists. Can you imagine? You print that out, walk out on the street and drop it. $20,000 you just lost.
LOL.
There are some people that get the joke, and there's some people that are like, I don't understand what either of these people are talking about.
NFTs are a digital asset of some sort. Might be a video, right? ESPN has been selling NFTs of like plays. Sports clips and things like that, which is fascinating to me. NFT, so it might be a still image, could be a photograph, could be a video. There was the multi-million dollar NFT of a video compilation that made headlines of 2 or 3 months ago. It could be a song could be released as an NFT. I bought a copy of I don't think I told you about this, Jeff, but there is a graphic novel called The Huxley Saga. Did I tell you about this?
Interesting. Okay. No, you didn't, okay. But I'm going to write down The Huxley Saga so I remember to check this out.
I am texting you the link, and I will drop the link into the show notes.
Thank you for saving me from having to write.
You are welcome. The Huxley Saga, it's a really, really, I love the art. It's, this far future post-apocalyptic world setting. And it is, what he did is he released issue one with a minting of 10,000. And minting is a type of NFT that basically allows you to make X number of copies. So most NFTs are unique. There is only one. The owner and the ownership is traceable. What's the chain of custody is traceable. What's the artwork called? It provenance.
Yes,
provenance of.
I keep saying I keep saying asset, but that's the wrong word. I know provenance.
Provenance is completely known. The chain of custody is completely known, et cetera. You can say that you're the one who owns this and you're the only one who has the rights to it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's essentially what an NFT is. All digitized, all on a blockchain somewhere. And what this guy did is a different form of an NFT where there will be 10,000 copies minted, and only 10,000 copies minted, which translates exactly one for, you know, it's exactly analogous with the traditional graphic novel slash comic book world.
Yeah, yes, you have a run. And once those are sold out, it's done, unless the publisher decides to do another run, but it's now seen as a new edition.
Right. And that would be the case here, although he's not said anything about making another edition. And he's charging 0.1 Ethereum, which as of this speaking is roughly $480. Plus, you have to pay the Ethereum gas because Ethereum's a mess, which, you know, is going to cost you 60, 70, 80 bucks, possibly, depending on when you do it, to actually get it. And then you own a copy of this. And then once all 10,000 are sold, theoretically, they could be traded if people actually care about getting issue one or mint one of this particular graphic novel. Now, you're a comic book fan. It's
like an actual print graphic novel. Yes.
Yeah. Except for
I most definitely am.
It's a digital version. And that to me is an interesting solution. It is an interesting problem that blockchain technologies, NFTs in particular, and cryptocurrency can solve in bringing comic books into the digital era. I mean, this guy can make money. He's actually made quite a bit of money. He sold 4,358 of these at that price I just mentioned. Which
really, refresh your browser and you'll see it's 5,642.
That's how many are left.
Oh, huh. Read the whole thing,
you're right. No, you're actually right. He has sold 500. He sold 5,642 of them.
Yep. So I did read it right.
Right. So, you know, he's made quite, let's see if we go that times 480, he's made a whole lot of money. $2.7 million. Am I getting that right? Times 480. He's made,
you know, actually looking at the way he made his little chart.
Yep.
It's like he went out of his way to make it as backwards as he could. So it's a thermometer that's counting down, but from right to left. So issues remaining is 5,642.
Right.
Yeah. So I read it wrong initially because his thing's backwards.
And then I
the way he set it up
corrected it. All right. So he sold 4,358 at $480 each. He's made over $2 million. Tell me how many comic book artists can make $2 million. Now he might not be able to, it hasn't sold out. And if it doesn't sell out, it's going to radically lower interest in issue two. But he has already made $2 million. And again, how many comic book artists, how many graphic novelists can make $2 million on an issue? And the answer is none.
The answer is none. Yeah. I can count in the comic book industry probably on one hand the number of writers that could bring in that kind of money, but it wouldn't be just one issue. It would be
a series.
Like they've been contracted to do a run.
Right. Right. And don't get me wrong. There's a lot of NFT hype. He's the first person to do this. Right. And so there are a lot of people that probably bought this just because they anticipate it going up in value, which may or may not be the case. And maybe it'll turn out that price is way too high. Again, Ethereum has a lot of issues where it's insanely way too expensive to actually send Ethereum from you know, one wallet to another, one address to another. And you know, those are issues, but there are other cryptos that are solving some of those problems. And there are business solutions that cryptocurrency and blockchain technologies can bring to market and solve problems that can be solved. In some cases, new things that we never would have thought about can be done with them. And that's where cryptocurrency and blockchain technology has potential value to both the business world and to us as consumers. But anything is there for Apple to do at this point, which again is why I think that Tim Cook's position, despite me being an obvious crypto nerd, I don't think he's wrong at all.
And I agree with you.
All right. Sweet.
Even though there are certain elements where I can't justify the way I feel about some of this stuff, I agree with you. I think he's making the right choice.
Got it. All right. So hopefully we didn't belabor that, but let me jump right into telling you about LinkedIn Jobs. That's right. LinkedIn Jobs are sponsoring this week's Apple Context Machine. Sure appreciate that. And the thing is that we're all busy. We're all busier than we've ever been. If you're a business owner, you're feeling it. You're busy, and spending time searching for the right candidate can feel like you're just taking time away from growing your business or running your business or doing all the other things that you have to do too. That's why LinkedIn Jobs made it easier to find the people you want to talk to faster and for free. You can create a free job post in minutes on LinkedIn Jobs to reach your network and beyond to the world's largest professional network of over 770 million people. You can focus on candidates with just the right skills and experience and use screening questions to get your role in front of only the most qualified people. Then you can use the simple tools on LinkedIn Jobs to quickly filter and prioritize who you'd like to interview and hire. It's why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs the number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. And here's the thing, what I like. I like the tools that they have for managing your candidates, managing your job postings. It all makes it very simple. It's just a simple interface that's right there in front of you. It's easy to do. Really, really like it. And LinkedIn Jobs helps you find those candidates you want to talk to faster. For instance, did you know that every week nearly 40 million job seekers visit LinkedIn? You can post your job for free. It's for free at LinkedIn.com/ACM. That's LinkedIn.com/ACM to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. And I really appreciate them sponsoring this episode. I would love it if you went to go check them out. Once again, that's LinkedIn.com/ACM to post your job for free. Jeff, you wanted to talk about something that Apple announced this morning, again, as of this recording day.
Right. And in our defense, in your defense, since you'll be actually publishing the show, whenever the show comes out, remember, we live in new times. Time is no longer linear. It's this ephemeral concept. So
you're such
it's
a good wingman.
Like the show is coming out at the same time it's being recorded, or even before.
You're such a good wingman. Thank you.
I've got your back.
Thank you.
So anyhow, whenever the show does manage to show up in the next few days, this morning Apple announced a new product called Business Essentials, which I see as a very interesting service package from the company, because it's a thing where if you have a company, it's like 500 employees or less, it's a service you can use. And for a per seat recurring license for each user, you get access to all of Apple's apps, their office related apps, which are already free, but it's like this whole package where you've got that, plus you've got iCloud storage space, plus you have an MDM type service, mobile device management service, and Apple support, and I think is that all of it? I think that's all the stuff that's in there.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So the idea is, you pay per person in your company, and you've got everything you need for that person to do their job in a subscription package, and you also have device management rolled in as well.
Okay.
And I see this as something Apple should have done a long time ago. I mean, they already had all the elements together. They just needed to, or no, they had all the elements. They just needed to put them together into a subscription package. And now they're doing that. And it's smart. They should have been doing this already. And I think that they're smart by targeting a specific part of the business market. So, like small businesses, essentially, and leaving the larger, more complex companies to other service providers. And yeah, I think this is a good idea.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. And you say that you think Apple should have done it. And I'll add to that that in hindsight, now that they have done it, it is surprising that they didn't do it. I mean, we know that companies like Jamf have been, has sponsored the show in the distant past. Jamf regularly sponsors TDO. And by the way, on the Wednesday show for TMO's Daily Observations, or TDO as we call it, Kelly and Andrew also talked about this. And I think Kelly talked about it a lot more from the standpoint of the company that Apple bought to make this happen.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the name of that company? If only
I want to say it starts with an F, but I can't remember now.
Only if, by the way, we have a new store here. Twitter creates crypto team reporting to CTO.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, that happened while we were talking about Apple and all this other stuff. So she hasn't posted TDO. Anyway, yeah, Apple bought a device fleet services management company, I don't know, a year or two ago, 3 years ago, something like that, some time ago. And they're just now rolling it out, which is interesting. But from the standpoint of easing friction, you know, Apple has heretofore left this to companies like Jamf and even IBM. IBM does a lot of corporate fleet management, if I'm not mistaken.
Fleet Smith.
Thank you. That's the company Apple bought.
Can you believe that I've just been sitting here with my eyes closed, just making every brain cell I have churn to come up with that when I could have just simply done a Google search?
Yes, I can believe that. You asked me if I could believe that.
Wow. Okay. My head hurts. But carry on.
So anyway, yeah, it is surprising that Apple hasn't already done this. Apple has left this in the hands of other companies. And I think that that probably made a whole lot of sense, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, when, you know, Apple basically did not have the resources to be offering things like that. Companies like IBM were very adept at it. And Jamf grew in part because they were simply so good at it.
Right.
So, I don't know. I think it's a good thing. I'm wondering, you mentioned that it is a 500. There's a 500.
It's 500 limit, user cap.
But yeah. Not 500 devices, 500 users.
That's my interpretation of it.
Yeah. Kelly and Dave quipped, you know, that could essentially be up to like a 2000 device limit. You get an iPad and a work Mac and a home Mac that, you know, a portable Mac and an iPad and an iPhone, maybe an Apple Watch too. And, you know, you could well be looking at, you know, 2, 3, 5 devices per person. It's interesting. It's good. I don't think this is a big threat to these other companies, unless, of course, Apple intends to grow that seat limitation.
Well, I think they need to do more than grow the seat limitation. They need to build in some serious integrations, because at least from the information that I have right now, it's just basically everything inside the Apple ecosystem, and that's it. Whereas if you're using Jamf, I mean, that ties into a lot of other services that you can control as well. Like, you know, like if your company that relies on Azure or Salesforce.
Azure being then, Microsoft's
version of AWS. So cloud managed data and services platform, basically, in a very simple term.
Right. These are
things that Jamf does that Apple Business Essentials doesn't.
Sure.
So if you're a company that is using anything outside of Apple's own ecosystem for your company, where you need to manage everything, just as you would manage every Mac and iPhone and iPad that's on your network or part of your company, then Apple Business Essentials is not going to do what you need. It doesn't matter how many seats Apple allows.
Sure. That makes sense. So anyway, good times to be a small, medium-sized business with multi-device fleet management needs.
And for everyone that's thinking, Apple just Sherlocked Jamf and all of the other companies that are like Jamf, no, they didn't.
I wouldn't call them. They're going into competition with them. I don't feel like it's Sherlocking them, though.
Oh, yeah, they're definitely going into competition with them.
I mean, like, the thing with Sherlock is that Sherlock was a for-fee product. Apple tried to hire the person that made it, and when that person said no, Apple just turned around and copied a lot of the features and gave it away for free. That's Sherlock.
Yeah, and the specific product everyone was talking or is referencing when you say Sherlocking is Watson.
Right, and Apple's product was called Sherlock. And am I getting that right?
Are we doing it backwards? It's been so long ago.
Watson.
I mean, that was another time.
Watson was the companion to Sherlock, to Apple Sherlock, right. And that was the whole point. So basically, Apple then added a lot of the features of Watson to Sherlock, and that's why it's called Sherlock. But in this particular case, Apple bought a competitor and took quite a bit of time to add that infrastructure to their own services, and now has launched that as a service. And that to me is not Sherlocking.
I agree. There's no Sherlocking happening here.
Yeah. All right. Good times, I guess. Hopefully. And, you know, if anything, it's going to keep the IBMs and the Jamfs, you know, it's going to keep them on their toes and make sure they're continuing to offer best in class services.
Right.
And also,
competition's good.
Also, brings awareness to the concept in the first place. So this could be a situation where Apple's involvement is a tide that lifts at least some boats.
Yeah, that would be great.
Maybe, yeah. All right. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Brian.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. I'm hanging out with you, thinking about cake.
Okay. All right. Well, all right. First of all, let me do this thing that we do. And then say, that is this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to add, comment on, or question, you can write me at acm@macobserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly, basis by Boom, that was recorded just for us. And that is, in fact, Not quite all for this week, because I do want to thank once again LinkedIn Jobs for sponsoring this week's show. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the candidates you want to talk to faster. Did you know every week nearly 40 million job seekers visit LinkedIn, and you can post your first job for free at linkedin.com/ACM. They've got my show right in the URL. That's linkedin.com/ACM to post your job for free. Terms and conditions do apply. Jeff, tell us where our listeners can find you.
Sure. How about Jay Gamut on Twitter and Instagram?
Yes.
And youtube.com/JayGamut for my occasional videos. And did you know that I'm pretty much a regular on Mac Voices Live with Chuck Joyner?
I did, but I mean, no, really? Do tell.
Really? Really? Jeez, we're going to have to work on your delivery. Yeah, so Tuesday evenings, talk about all kinds of Apple-related stuff with Chuck and a bunch of other cool people. And I'm currently the interim host on The Big Show on Thursdays and The Mac Show on Fridays.
Right. So I want to add this. I love your Instagram feed. You did all through October. You posted ink drawings for Inktober. Which I always
did. It was a lot of fun.
I always thought the Inktober was for tattoos, but whatever. The Zinc drawings were great. It was fantastic seeing it. I also really enjoy your street art series, just on the street art of Boulder.
Oh my God. Okay, Brian, yeah. If you're ever out here, I'm taking you on a street art tour.
Fantastic, man.
Because we have some amazing stuff.
Cannot wait. That'd be great. Anyway, so yeah, I love your Instagram feed. You're a very good photographer, but also you have a very interesting eye. Like the things that you want to show us are good. So I strongly recommend it. Tell us what that Instagram feed is one more time.
Jay Gamut.
Go figure. Who knew?
I know.
You can find the link in the show notes, by the way. And on that happy note. Thanks for being here, Jeff.
You're welcome, Brian.